they took, and this is public, and they've said it publicly, that it was 120 steps to build product to the BOM level in their ERP system.
Yeah.
They do three clicks and can create product and spec right. Now, we didn't chase the ERP out. We just integrate with them and share data back and forth, but we allow the building of products, because it's at the spec level, to be much quicker and faster.
Growing a business requires a holistic approach that extends beyond sales and marketing. This approach needs alignment among people, processes, and technologies. So if you're a business owner, operations, or finance leader looking to learn growth strategies from your peers and competitors, you're tuned into the right podcast. Welcome to the WBS Podcast, where scalable growth using business systems is our number one priority. Now, here is your host, Sam Gupta.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the WBS Podcast. I'm Sam Gupta, your host and principal consultant at independent ERP and digital transformation consulting firm, Elevate IQ. BOMs inside ERP systems are not designed to track specification data. If you have several variables associated with your BOMs, then you might need to track specifications separately. Even if you have PIM or PLM, you might still need the specification software, as that can not only help in creating the product model faster, but it can centralize your specification data, especially if you might be using multiple systems in your architecture. The centralized specifications could also provide insights into data and analytics you might need to optimize your procurement or to pursue sustainability initiatives. In today's episode, our guest, Matthew Wright, shares his insights into specification management for manufacturers. He also discusses what specification is and how it differs across industries. Finally, he discusses concepts such as the difference between specification management software versus PLM, versus PIM, versus BOMs, versus CAD add-on software that remove duplicate part data, user journeys for specification management software, and how the analytics software differs from the operational software. Let me introduce Matthew to you. Matthew Wright is the founder and CEO of SpecWright. Prior to founding SpecWright, he spent more than 25 years in the packaging industry, holding leadership positions at International Paper, Temple Inland, and Wright PAQ, a packaging company he co-founded. He has also been involved in leading multiple M&A deals in the packaging industry. He sits on the packaging advisory board at Cal Poly San Luis Obispo, and recently became a published author, writing the book, The Evolution of Products and Packaging. With that, let's get to the conversation. Hey, Matthew, welcome to the show.
Welcome. Thank you very much for having me. I'm excited to be here today.
And I am super excited to have you as well, because the kind of depth that you are going to bring from the specification, which a lot of listeners not even be familiar with what that is. So it's going to be super exciting. Just to kick things off, do you want to start with your personal story and your current focus, Matthew?
Yeah, absolutely, Sam. No, and hopefully I can make specifications really exciting for the next 40 minutes or so. It's my passion, so hopefully that comes through and I'll explain why. But yeah, no, my background, I've had an amazing career. I've been 20 plus years in the packaging industry before getting into technology. I was able to, in that career, see all things made. I always talk about, I've seen chickens processed, yeah, and missiles made. And in that world, you get a chance to kind of see all verticals and all different kind of disciplines coming, yeah, together to make amazing products. So
yeah,
been able to do that for, again, my whole career. But, and we'll talk a little bit about it. That really what's launched my excitement about specifications and why I think that they're so valuable today.
Okay, amazing. So it's going to be really interesting to dig into all of those details, how specification is going to vary across the industries. But before we do that, we have one of the standard questions that we ask every single guest that come on the show. And that is going to be your perspective on business growth.
Well, I love business growth. So, you know, one of the things that I've had, again, in my career, an opportunity to run over 30 different manufacturing facilities, and every one of them grew, which is exciting. And I've always been believing that today, more than ever, technology and the enablement of technology, such as what we're going to talk about today and others, really is what's going to catapult growth for these companies and differentiate them to be even more successful than they are today. Amazing companies making amazing products, but rethinking how they can do that faster, more efficiently, and spend less human time kind of on wasted menial tasks and really look at new product development, better supply chains, more sustainable products. It's so exciting, I think, today to be in the manufacturing space.
Could not agree more. Yes, it is indeed true that today is the best time to be in the manufacturing industry. It's only going to get brighter. So let's go back to our the foundational topic that we really wanted to discuss. So I know you wanted to talk about the specification, and a lot of listeners, our audience, as you know, is the CFOs and the COOs. They might not be familiar with what specification really is. Do you want to paint the color through an example of the industry, maybe a couple of industries, what specification really is and why it matters for the organization?
Yeah, no, and it's exciting. You know, the conversation when I started, you know, over 5 years ago in this journey of specification management and defining this category now that Gartner's talking about and partnering with SAP and other companies, you know, it was a big question. I mean, what is the specification? I think what's happened, Sam, in the last couple of years, obviously with COVID and the supply chain disruptions, people, unfortunately, for the wrong reasons, have become very well aware of what specs are, but glad to kind of dissect it a little bit deeper than that. And specifications, and what drove me to the thought of specification management is, again, as I mentioned, all these great companies and great people and operating side of the business, what I found them doing was really not very smart tasks. They were chasing samples, they were chasing spreadsheets, they were calling their vendors up for information, calling their sales rep up for information. And I really struggled for, you know, when supply chains were less complex, I even was struggling with, why are these smart people chasing data and trying to figure out what something's made of or what color it is or what material it is? And so what I realized is I believe, and my passion is, that the specification is the start of all things. And it's been ignored for a lot of reasons. And we can jump into why the spec historically from a technology standpoint was ignored and why it's more relevant today.
Yeah.
But a specification is everything. Everything's a spec. So if you have a box, you know, what's the paper in that box? What's the thickness of the box?
Yeah.
What's the dimensions of the box? What's the colors?
Yeah.
If you have a bar, a candy bar, what's the flour in there? What's the sugar in there? What's the chocolate in there? And breaking that data down to that what I call DNA level, and then building that back up to create product creates amazing. And it's a completely different way to think of making products today.
Okay, very interesting perspective there. And, you know, again, I want to make sure that my listeners are able to follow along. So I am going to recap some of the things that you mentioned just in describing what specifications. As you know, a lot of our listeners may not have as deep packaging background. And I don't know if this definition of specification is really going to be across the industries. You know, the closest thing that I can think of when I am thinking of what you are describing, it's going to be either the product information management data or it is going to be the BOM. BOM typically has all of those elements as well. It's going to have all of the materials that are going to be required to be able to produce the product. Sometimes it does have the packaging data, but obviously it is not going to be as detailed as you are trying to describe. Then you might have some of the other metrics product, you know, if you are in those industries. For example, let's say if we are talking about fashion or apparel, they have a lot of different attributes that are going to define the product. But then you have the product information management data, because that actually drives a lot of different categories on the website. So if you were to sort of paint the colors and talk about different examples of different industries and how specification data is going to vary, do you want to do that?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's jump into it, because you just brought up a lot of great topics about kind of various systems, legacy systems today, et cetera, and the detail level that I'm talking about. So, you know, you're right in some ways. I would say the BOM is the afterthought of a spec. And historically, you know, ERPs, which I think we perform very well with, and we'll talk about integrations, et cetera, with ERPs. But ERP really cared about the product at the final stage for that facility and the cost of goods and the general ledger, et cetera. Yeah. And it was built for that.
Yeah.
What it wasn't built for was dissecting product down to a granular level, a very low level of detail. And as I said, what color formulations, it does not just packaging, but product.
Yeah.
We're doing machinery specs. What's the bolt? You know, what's the screw? What's the sub bomb? What's the motor? You know, getting down to that level. And then what we talk about, that's digitizing the specs. And we talk about each industry. Then we talk about mapping. Mapping is really when it becomes kind of the bomb level, which is now you're pulling these parts together.
Yeah.
And the systems you talked about, we'll get to PIM in a minute, but really ERP, PLMs, really wasn't ultimately concerned with the bolt that goes into that product or the box that goes in that product. It was concerned with the final result, the end result. Today, with supply chain challenges, sustainability, everything else, that bolt matters. That bolt really matters. Yeah. And we should only have one version of that for your 100 facilities. We're working with the most well-known heavy-duty industrial manufacturer in the world. And what they found is they have 80 different versions of everything because they have 80 different facilities. And that bolt might be, you know, a milligram difference between the 80 or that box might be. But that's enough to challenge them. And so why not have a system that looks horizontally at the data and then relates it to a facility, relates it to a bomb. So it's again, it's not saying that we're not going to displace ERPs. I think we run very well with them.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about kind of bilateral languages sharing back and forth.
Yeah.
But those systems weren't built for what we're trying to do. We're trying to dissect again. We want to take a bulldozer down to the bolt. We want to take, you know, a candy bar down to the flour and sugar and really build up from there. And then integrate with these other systems that exist today for financial purposes or other kind of purposes, which we'll talk about. So again, it's a fundamentally different approach. What's fun today is I get almost zero resistance because when I go talk to companies, they know. I was talking to a COO of a major CPG company the other day, and he knows. He's like, hey, I know, you know, kind of 80% of the stuff sitting in my ERP, SAP global platform.
Yeah.
But I also know that all the details you're talking about are sitting in spreadsheets and people's file folders and PDFs and the vendors. Yep. And that's not cool with me. I would prefer you to bridge this gap in technology and these systems to run together and get out of this kind of chaotic state that people are keeping the minor leftover details that create product. And so we can talk about verticals, but that's at a high level. What a spec is, again, much lower level of detail. We're standardizing that detail so that everybody looks at this, the data the same way. You know, water spec should be the same, a paper spec should be the same, a bolt spec should be the same, and then connecting those to create product.
Okay.
I know there's a lot there, Sam, but that's kind of the it's got to be a net different thought process. And what's fun today is we're just not hitting resistance. People get that this isn't being managed at that level and that it needs to be today. It's different.
And those are the details, to be honest. I mean, I really like, obviously, there is a lot to unpack, and we will be doing that as we move along in this episode. So obviously, I completely agree with you that, you know, ERP is probably going to maintain that final state of the product. There is a lot that goes in before the product is ready to be manufactured, to be shipped, to be invoiced. That's the state that typically ERP maintains. There's going to be a previous state to that. Now, I will also make one comment related to your comment related to formulation. Now, formulation is a very specific term that is typically used in the food and beverage space. There might be some of the discrete verticals that they might be using, but formulation is not typically relevant with your discrete verticals, which typically use the term called bill of material, even though both are probably going to be bill of materials, but they don't use the term formulation. Now, you know, there is a little bit more overlap overall the way you are describing, and I want to make sure that people have clear positioning in their head where you fit in the overall ecosystem. So when you look at the PLM, now PLM is where the real engineering department sit. If you are talking about spaces such as automotive, spaces such as that are going to be very heavy on engineering, and they typically maintain this data inside the PLM system. They are going to have far more details from the CAD perspective, from design perspective, from the physical property, from the manufacturability, from the feasibility perspective that ERP should not care and ERP typically does not have. Now, when you compare and contrast yourself with the PLM, is your product going to be more of the PLM for the food and beverage industry, or is it different? Can you touch on that?
Yeah, no, definitely. So just kind of closing out ERPs, we'll come back to it, but just to close out, Yeah, I've always said we cohabitate and we actually put ERPs back to where they comfortably belong. And I want to just touch on that and I'll jump into PLMs.
Right.
So a major chemical producer in the industrial space has a full suite, you know, SAP ERP program.
Yeah.
And they wanted to build products faster. And so in order to do that, they took, and this is public and they've said it publicly, that it was 120 steps to build product to the BOM level in their ERP system.
Yeah.
They do three clicks and can create product and spec right. Now, we didn't chase the ERP out. We just integrate with them and share data back and forth. But we allow the building of products, because it's at the spec level, to be much quicker and faster. And that's a relevant story because you jump to PLM.
Yeah.
And, you know, I look at PLMs in twofold.
Okay.
To your question. So in some verticals and some spots, we could displace the PLM where we have maybe a little bit less complexity of bringing product to the finish. But to your question about industrials and the heavy use of PLMs, what's interesting, if you kind of want to look at it from a tech stack perspective, if they're working on a PLM and they're really using that to move process along and product along through that process, we sit below there. So we dissect that product even deeper below there and allow that product to be used and represented in multiple different work streams. So we're not really just focused on maybe, and we have automotive customers and heavy industrial companies.
Yeah.
We're not looking just perhaps to get that one car through the line, but everything in that process that may be used on everywhere else is a specification that can be used and shared in another process to bring product to market. So now if that company that's using this PLM cannot go to market and say, hey, I know every kind of piece of plastic bolt I need, that now they can look at it from a horizontal data perspective and pull those 32 uses of that bolt, standardizing what we have a like item finder, share that out, and then know where that's related to in every one of those 32 other relationships. So again, we have a process management in SpecRite, but if you have a very dedicated process management, we sit below there, you know, push our data in and to make that picture better at PLM. If you have a process that's not that arduous that you want to manage process lighter, we can layer that on top of the specifications. We do that today. The automotive companies that we work with today, what's interesting is they've brought, you know, I get your point. I tend to somewhat disagree with it because I just see so many opportunities out there. Their data is not in good condition. Their data is not in one system. The automotive company we're working with, one of the big ones, we're pulling the data to build these specs from 8 different sources.
One,
a little bit's in PLM, a little bit's in the old legacy system, might be an old Lotus system. One of it might be at the vendor. And it's, again, we're trying to pull 100 elements in. You know, 20 are coming from here, 2 have come from. We want that picture in one place and clean, and then give access to everybody of that visualization, and then keep that data clean. And I think you do that. Again, we're pulling most companies we're pulling on the industrial side from 2 or 3 to 6 or 7 different systems to paint the picture of a spec. And breaking that down real quick, it could be, like I said, it could be the ink colors are coming from the vendor, the materials coming from the engineering department. The bomb is at the PLM or ERP. We got to bring all that together and digitize that in one spot.
Yeah, very interesting. So I completely agree overall your assessment that, you know, a lot of systems are probably going to have a lot of different data sets. And you mentioned one of the comments that your product is probably going to be sitting down to the PLM. And I want to make sure that we are able to follow along what down means. Is it going to be more of the add-on to a PLM? And I'll give you one example of a company that is doing similar things. I don't know if they are going to be your competitor. They are going to be similar to you. It's the company called Cadenas Part Solutions. Okay. So what they do is they position themselves as more of in the engineering department of these discrete verticals. They try to position themselves as sort of the analysis of the engineering data, find out where you are going to have those duplicate parts, detect those duplicate parts so that you have a very consistent engineering data. They typically don't work sort of in the actual production floor or the manufacturing floor. Their scope is going to be to analyze the engineering data. Now, is your product going to be similar? Maybe for process industries, are they going to be your competitor? Where do you see yourself as being fit when you are comparing with the solution and in reference to the PLM?
Yeah, so a couple of things. One is I don't really look at, you know, ultimately there will be competitors. I look at, we're very open. So I just came back from our summit, which we brought partners and academia and other solutions in. So I look at this as a massive market, massive opportunity to collaborate together. Our data typically enables companies like that to perform better. So I would almost argue that perhaps we have a data set of millions and millions of specs today that they could probably run their analytics on top of. We have some tools like Item Finder and other stuff that studies the data and looks for similar products, looks to consolidate products. So maybe in a point solution, we'd compete. But in general, my thought is, if we have all this data set of everything made, industrials to food to bev to CPGs, and we have that data track, there's amazing things that can happen to create better products faster in the world. And so I'd look to actually collaborate with people like that more than compete. But I think the key is, as you said before, back to the PLM conversation, you know, what I want to do is I want to digitize the product, right?
Yeah.
And these companies build the product. And so if I digitize all the things that go into that product and I digitize it with all the elements you need to necessary to procure it, to make it more sustainable, to buy it somewhere else. And I have all that data sitting below the process level.
Yeah.
It only enriches the process level. And so let's just say what we just went through and an automotive is dealing with it right now. You can't get a chip or you can't get something to finish the process. Now I have that enriched data sitting in the specification level that then we can look and we can throw analytics against it. Can you change this product? Can you source this product somewhere else? We saw that in the supply chain challenges when COVID first hit us. Everybody said, well, just move capacity around.
Yeah.
Well, did it really happen? It didn't happen. Why didn't it happen? Didn't happen because they didn't have good data. I mean, that's the reason that it didn't happen. They wanted to move lines from US to the Europe or Europe to China or China this. They couldn't do it because they weren't quite sure what they were doing and if you could move that stuff around. That's the visibility when you have the data right. Then you just throw the lenses, whether it's a type of product in a certain country or you have outages. That's why chemical companies love us, is they're challenged with certain raw material compounds. Is we can instantly throw the another layer of data analytics on and say, you can get it in these countries or you can't get it or whatever it is. That's the type of analytics you get from data. And so all I'm doing is digitizing the manufacturing world at that same level that we experience in other parts of the world. Does that make sense? And then lastly, back to the ERPs, PLMs. The other thing is, it's all about ultimately sharing and networking and provisioning this data.
Yeah.
You really don't want other companies in your PLMs or ERPs. You know, it's you want it in a very safe sharing spot. And that's what we in the cloud-based, very secure platform that we have. You can provision that I want this person to see this much data instantly. And if that data changes, I want them to know it instantly. That's a platform like SpecWrite or spec management platform. That's not what ERPs and PLMs are built to do. So, or people don't want them to do, you know, I don't think General Motors wants people in their PLM that where they're building their cars, but they do want to share the visibility of some of that data. And that's the platform like a SpecWrite platform.
Yeah. So very interesting. And obviously there are a lot of layers to that. And again, I want to make sure that my listeners are able to follow along in understanding what is going to be the right positioning, because as you can imagine, you know, if you look at these exagraphs, obviously there are going to be a million systems in the enterprise architecture. And sometimes it could be very confusing to follow along who is going to be doing what. So let's say if I were to ask you the one user in the organization, who is going to be the primary consumer of the specification data, who that person is going to be and what they are using it for and how they are collaborating with the other stakeholders. If you can describe the user journeys of these users, that'll be super helpful.
Yeah, no, definitely. I'll start kind of the top down. And so one thing I will say, you know, and I think this was something I heard early on, you know, and I get what you're doing to some degree. It's a new thought process, but who's really and how often are they going to use this data? So our user scores are near social media. So we're way above industrial technology, which means by formulation that people are spending half their day in the platform. So, and then to your question, I'll answer who that is. But the systems are highly used and actively used. Now talk about the outcomes of what they're doing with the system. And generally, our core audience, whether that's the buying group or the actual user group, is on the operating side of the business. It sits below the COO, obviously it sits below the CEO, but it's really on the operating, on the manufacturing side of the business. And generally, historically, who brought us in was engineering, to your earlier point, departments or people that were developing products. Today, our audience are really fourfold. definitely heavy on procurement. You know, procurement, this is a great tool to analyze what you're doing, to buy better. And we can talk about some stories on that. Definitely on the supply chain. Hey, I want to be able to move my data, or I want to move my stuff around. And what does the impact of that do for me?
Yeah.
New product development, which we'll talk about. Why do we keep developing new products from scratch? Why not look at the reservoir data you have and create new products instantly? Yeah. And then ultimately sustainability. I've always said you can't be sustainable if you don't know what you got. If you don't have your fingertips at the button where you can push it, how much of resin I'm buying or how much of this I'm buying, you can't be sustainable. And so those are all in the operating arm. Typically are the groups that we work with the closest. The buyer of the system generally is at the COO level, depends on the size of the company, where they're talking to their operating groups, their directors, and saying, hey, I need to do these things today. We need to be more agile. We need to be more collective. And they go, well, we can't do it because the systems aren't allowing us. Interject come us. If there was a problem, a catastrophic issue, a system shutdown, a line problem, they go, what's the problem? And they drill in and realize it's the spec. The ability to touch that spec, ability to share that spec, and make sure that spec's correct is what's slowing their business down. And so the COO, again, depends on the size of company, VP of sourcing, VP of engineering, that's the funnel down. And then the users are line side, you know, a big heavy industrial manufacturer.
Yeah.
Every kitting line they have now is using SpecRight, and it sped up their manufacturing lines and the kitting lines by 50%. So we can have, you know, hundreds, if not thousands, of operators in the factories using the system, looking at it to do something. And then you can have the analytics of purchasing, procurement, sustainability using the system. And so, you know, we can have installations of a couple hundred to a couple thousand per company.
Okay.
And then ultimately we land and expand to your question. How do you bring us in? You've had a failure. We had, we had this part go out and we don't want to do that again. And then we get in and we kind of start to go viral and everybody wants to use that same data to do different things.
Yeah, so I completely agree with you. The personas that you have mentioned, I think they are going to have real pain in the pain point that you are trying to solve. And that is going to be either VP of sourcing because they need to know what is happening in the entire supply chain. It's going to be VP of engineering because they need to know, what is happening with that specification. But one of the problems that I typically find when I talk to a lot of different digital transformation practitioners or anybody who is developing any system that is going to be part of the enterprise architecture. Typically, there are two layers to the architecture. Okay, one is going to be your operational layer. The second is going to be your analytical layer. Typically, they are two different beasts. Okay, people often mix them. Okay, your analytics is not supposed to be doing your operational transaction. Your operational transaction has a very different rigid workflow. If you are not able to do that, obviously your analytics is not going to. Okay, your analytics systems are extremely important in the architecture. Okay, but they should not be playing the role of the core operations when you are moving that from your engineering order to your sales order to your shipment to your how you are moving goods in the warehouse. That's a very different process. So in your description, when you mentioned that you were emphasizing a lot more on the study, on the analytics, that how these guys are going to be looking at this data. So is this tool primarily used for the study analysis, or is it going to be part of the core enterprise workflow, which means I have this file. Now, next you go and do this job, and then the next guy, and that is going to be your either order to cash transaction or P2P transaction. Are you part of that, or are you part of your analytical analytics, and you are actually trying to improve the workflow because you have far more centralized data than anybody else in the enterprise architecture?
So to start off, your great question at the very start, and it's a conversation we obviously have quite a bit. What's the, historically, here's the two, to your point, here's the two beasts that we both got to feed, make sure they're accurate. And then what we envision, and again, every company's outcome is a little bit different. And we'll talk about that every vertical. The core problem is the same. The core problem is we don't have a standardized method to look at the data at a very granular level.
Yeah.
And then to your point, because of that, we have a lot of challenges downstream. And we just talked about those. So we look at it really at the analytics and business outcome side, right? Is if you have better data and you can run, and we'll talk about some what if scenarios or run scenarios on top of that and change your process flow. When I talk about digitizing, mapping, which is building the bomb, and then operationalizing at the operational level, it's don't repeat the same 130 process steps that you've done for 20 years because you didn't have good systems and you didn't have this. Let's reinvent that process steps. Let's take the 130 down to 20 and make them better, make it more reliable product made faster. And I think back to keeping the sanctity of the data clean is really about provisioning. You know, not everybody. You have 1,000 users. You can't have 1,000 people that can touch the core data. Obviously, you provision. That's the best part, as you know today, about the technology is it's so amazing today. Is we can provision that data down to one master, you know, data person or some gating around that or some parts of the data gated. But it's really availing that data in a very analytical, fluid, easy to use. One of the big customers ours said we're as easy to use as Spotify. You know, and I talk a lot about ease of use for industrial applications.
Yeah.
And so I want to impact the business positively. I want companies to make better products faster, less mistakes, less waste. And you do that by having the data at the fingertips. A lot of people, and you know this, a lot of people don't like to use the legacy systems they have, so they do workarounds. And that's kind of the world we've ended up in. And so I talk about living a double life. You know, we have this amazing experience as a human consuming technology. And then we go to the office and we hit the brakes and it stops, right? And the experience should be the same. And that's really what we're trying to strive to, your point about the analytics and outcomes, is make it start to become proactive. You know, open your screen in the morning and have the system tell you, hey, I noticed that this is going on, that's going on. You know, you might want to look at this item, or hey, I've heard there's some world economic issues over here. Do you know these three items you buy come from that part of the world? I mean, that's where we got to go, man. And we're so far from that. But again, digitizing the data, mapping, operationalizing, we're starting to see the really cool outcomes ahead of us with changing the way businesses come to the market, with better products, less waste, lower cost. So I'm excited, as you can tell. But I think the rest of the world, and I'm starting to get Gartner's now talking about, SAP's talking about, everybody's starting to talk about the spec, the value of the spec. I see it so clearly, to your point. It's hard to articulate that always to everybody that doesn't. Is to have this amazing world change on us, we got to know, you know, the label, what the label, the bottle, the cap, the tire is made of at our fingertip.
Yeah, and I completely agree. In fact, I mean, I can attest from my own personal experience, and I am actually going to bring a story, of one of the friends that we hosted on our podcast as well. I don't know if you're connected with Melissa Drew. She's very active in the supply chain procurement space. She consults with a lot of different automotive companies. And one of the problems that she was trying to describe from her engagement is she had 18 systems, I guess, overall, you know, many different ERPs, many different PLMs, many different the integration tools that were trying to really integrate all of these systems. Her focus is really, she wants data. As the VP of strategic sourcing, she is looking for the data. She is looking for ways to be able to collaborate with vendors. Obviously, the vendor collaboration piece is probably going to be part of your PLM. It's probably going to be part of your ERP, but you don't have that consistent state where you can have the full picture that, okay, this is what I am sending to my vendor. What am I receiving from that? So I think that is really good use case of that analytical workflow that you are trying to describe. And that's where you are going to get a lot of insights in terms of improvising your products. And this is where I think your product can really help. Am I reading this right? Is this where 100%. You said?
So you probably heard my speech I gave a week and a half ago at our summit, which is portals are dead. You know, supplier portals are dead. It's the way of the past. We're our fourth leg of the stool. I talked about digitizing the data, bringing that data in from all these crazy spots. We have a team that does that, mapping that data. So creating product and creating that, and then workflows and all that. The fourth leg is network. And what's really cool about network is we're starting to see it already happen, which is we're having these partners all on the platform, sharing data with the same language, the same way that you look at it, visibility. And it's a supply user, dealer, retailer, whatever it is, you're all sharing that same data set on the same platform. And we're stopping to see the duplication. We don't need to duplicate everything a million times. We need to just provision the visibility of that data. So give you a great story about network and suppliers is if you go on the system today, and we're launching network here this quarter, and you as a vendor, say we're a vendor sourcing something, you can broadcast your spec or broadcast your product. And to your point, the person you mentioned can consume that, and that could become their spec, and they can connect it in their product.
Yeah.
And then any sort of relational changes, it's notified in both situations. So if it's a part that's changed or a part number that's changed or whatever it is, that's automatically visualized in both those parties' relationships. So there's no more back and forth. We're seeing 65% of this dialogue is going on over emails. I said a couple of weeks ago, my goal is to kill emails. You know, there's 600 emails to build a product. It's insane. And so, yeah, it's we see in other places, this is just new in the spot, is let's get on a network and share data and keep it common. So absolutely, that's the future. That's where we're going to catapult and make this thing work really well. And then you've got these industrial companies that want to work together and maybe go to the market with buying the products together or sourcing some new design together. It's almost impossible today without a common language and a common platform to enable these companies to do that. That's what we're talking about right now.
Okay, very good. So now we are going to do a little bit of walkthrough. I don't know if you are able to sort of provide some sort of insight from the architectural perspective as these systems are designed. And I don't know if you want to pick the same story, the chemical story that you mentioned, you know, maybe pick that or maybe something else, whichever you are most comfortable with. What I am looking from this description is going to be, obviously, you need to have an ERP because that's your, you know, financial core, that's your operational core. You know, you are probably going to have PLM, and then you are probably going to have your software as well in that mix. So describe how the product is going to be engineered, how the product is going to be manufactured. Take an example of a product, which product you are trying to describe, how many data elements are going to be sitting in which system, and try to visualize those arrows. You know, let's say if I were to sort of draw the data exchange diagram between different systems, now you are actually trying to explain the same diagram from the enterprise architecture perspective. So pick a product that you are trying to engineer, that you are trying to manufacture, and which role what system is going to play in that architecture. Can you pick any story and describe that?
Yeah, let's do. There's a couple, but and again, I don't claim to be the system architect. I have an amazing CTO and team, but I do a dangerous job at it. Obviously, as the original architect of the system, and I'll explain our schema a little bit, how our tech stack's developed, and then ultimately, to your point, our technology stack obviously is going to vary greatly by customer. You know, everybody's customers, you just said, is challenging. The cool part today is SpecRite, we built about a year and a half ago, our own open API, bilateral, so obviously either direction. I'll talk about an example. And so actually, you can come in and build your own connectivity in SpecRite in both directions, or we can build it, have somebody build it. So that's from a real, you know, high-level technical standpoint. We're very open. We believe in open sourcing and pulling other tools into to be an actual application. I'll use one because it's interesting because it pulls in different directions. Is there's a manufacturer, and I know it's not an industrial space, but it's the same concept. It's a cleaning product. And so basically the cleaning product right before COVID, I'll tell the whole story, had been using one source of supply for its label supply and its bottle supply for 20 years. Is a massive company, so it's a Fortune 50 company. And so, you know, they realized before even COVID, hey, we're going to be challenged to keep growing our business as rapidly as we are if we only have this one supplier, and that's not really smart. So we want to go out and have a couple more suppliers. And so what they realized, it took them a year to even try to get another supplier engaged because the data was missing. They didn't know quite exactly what the yield on the label was, or the color, or the cut, or the, et cetera. So they said, hey, can you solve this? We said, yeah. We put them on the platform. We broke that data to the label and the bottle and the box all the way down to the very granular level. And then we provisioned and allowed them on the network to share that data back out. And they brought three suppliers back on the system. And I'll talk about the architect in a minute, just the business case.
Yeah.
And so then ultimately what happened is what COVID hit literally like 6 months later. This product was flying off the shelves, as most cleaning products were. And what they're able to do is go from not just one to three, they're able to go from three to seven suppliers overnight. So now they've gone in 6 months from one supplier to seven suppliers, and this particular product did not miss a beat on the shelf. So I'm not going to say that was all because of us, but certainly a great company doing great things. But they're able to flex their supply chain instantly when 6 months ago, one supplier is fine. It's a multi-billion dollar product. And now all of a sudden they need seven because of the world change to keep product on the shelf. And so that's what the platform did from a business case. Then from more of an architecture sharing data perspective, we have a couple different elements. So you have a very, very critical. Now you have seven vendors all making different product or some similar product. Yeah. So visibility of how much everybody's making is hypercritical. Now all of a sudden it got complex, right? We added complexity. And so what we do is we integrate with their ERP system, the major brand's ERP system. And what we're doing is pulling the visibility of demand planning out and giving that visibility to the seven vendors. So now the seven vendors, anonymized, I don't know which one, knows that this, that one vendor's making a million of this, that guy made a million of this, I'm making 500. So it gives that visibility. And what's important is then that's routed and we integrate with the bottle manufacturer's ERP system to then tell them how much they should be producing to make sure they keep up with the label vendor, right? So we've got both ERP integrations going to different suppliers, and then ultimately back into the brand itself is we're able to give the visibility back to the system that this is what those vendors are doing out there. And so we're bilateral communication or integrations going both not only with the brand, but also with the supply base into their systems. And what's really cool is the people can pull SpecRep up and they're visualizing everything going on in these companies provisioned in the dashboard. And so that's changed. It's been a game changer for how fast they can and adapt to the market. And so for us, you know, to your question now, every one of those seven companies have a little bit different level of technology ability, right?
Yeah.
So in one case, we might be doing a flat file transfer because they really don't have a good system.
Yeah.
So literally it's Mary Jo's spreadsheet that we're consuming and putting it in a picture. And another one might be running off a really good analytics ERP that we can easily export that data. And so we map all that. That's part of the mapping process. What's the outcome? What's I care about? What's that dashboard? What do you want to see on that dashboard?
Yeah.
And then I'll bring that data in to visualize it.
Okay. Very interesting. Yeah, it does help. Thank you so much for those clarifications. I think that's very helpful. The only clarification that I am probably going to be needing, since you mentioned the demand planning term there, and there is another system that plays the responsibility of the demand planning typically in the organization, and that is probably going to be your SNOP system, which is going to be your Anaplans of the world, the Planful of the world, that are doing all of your SNOP planning. Sometimes they do financial planning. Sometimes they do connected planning. Now, are you talking to that system? Are you sitting in parallel to that system? Are you a replacement for that system? Do you want to touch a little bit on that?
You know, and again, I know it's not the easy answers, but I think you know better than anybody. Every company's data stack's a little different, right?
Yeah.
So everybody's utilizing tools to some degree. So in some cases, they aren't using those tools. And then in that case, you know, they might just be handling that with a production planning team that's maybe even manually doing it or Excel. For those that have it automated, typically what we're doing is just giving visibility back and forth. And visibility is when changes happen, ability to find out what specs that affects and who's supplying that spec and be able to give them this automatic trail of information. So we do. And again, in that relationship, we can go both directions. It can be like we have one customer that is manufacturing a lot of products that have some of the same core compounds.
Yeah.
And so in that world, the production schedule is enlightening them. And what they look at in the dashboard for SpecRite is, hey, there's an alert coming that I need these three compounds. By the way, these other compounds can be run in parallel and you can get a better buy if you go all five at the same time. And then the person at the use case, all they have to do is say yes or no. So they can adapt, they can pull that extra buy-in. They might have to go look at another system, see if they have visibility or integrate with their inventory system. But it's trying to make intelligence, right? That allows people to make decisions based upon other stuff going on within their ecosphere. So every tech stack is slightly different. We believe we sit in the middle because we're the core baseline data. We can, to your point, have analytics that come out of our system, or we can integrate with other systems to create analytics.
Okay, amazing details there. Absolutely love it. Obviously, it's always going to be challenging with any of the tech stack, and every organization is going to be different. And we definitely need to find the roles and responsibilities of each of the system and who's going to do what. On that note, I think that's it for today. Do you have any last minute closing thoughts or remarks for our listeners?
No, I'm just excited. And thank you for having me part of this. It's fun. The conversation's matured so much in the last 5 years. I think the realization that there's this big gap in need and we're fitting this really cool spot in the tech stack and technology world and really making a system that's user-friendly. People love using the system. They write about it. And it's really impacting companies. It's saving companies money. It's getting products to market faster. And we really are open source. I love talking to other technology leaders, other solution leaders, because I really think this is a massive space and we're just scratching the surface of what's possible. And have amazing excitement about what's coming down the road for us and for our customers. So again, thank you. I love talking about this stuff and it is complex and dynamic, but guess what? That's the world today.
Could not agree more. And, you know, my personal takeaway from this conversation is going to be the specification is going to be a real problem. So at least go and see where that is going to fit in your business model and the architecture and try to really learn how you can capitalize on that opportunity. This space is definitely going to grow. On that note, I want to thank you for your time. Matthew, this has been a powerful conversation.
Appreciate your time very much, Sam. Great stuff you're doing.
Thank you.
I cannot thank our guests enough for coming on the show, for sharing their knowledge and journey. I always pick up learnings from our guests, and hopefully you learned something new today. If you want to learn more about Matthew or specification management and how to take a spec first approach with a spec right, head over to specright.com. It's specright.com. Links and more information will also be available in the show notes. If anything in this podcast resonated with you and your business, you might want to check other related episodes, including the interview with Mark Ozer from Antares Consulting Group, who discusses how to launch new products by simply changing the packaging. Also, the interview with Adam Peake, who shares his insights on how sustainability initiatives can help your brand's strategic growth. Also, don't forget to subscribe and spread the word among folks with similar backgrounds. If you have any questions or comments about the show, please review and rate us on your favorite podcasting platform or DM me on any social channels. I'll try my best to respond personally and make sure you get help. Thank you, and I hope to catch you on the next episode of the WBS Podcast.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the WBS Podcast. Be sure to subscribe on your favorite podcasting platform so you never miss an episode. For more information on growth strategies for SMBs using ERP and digital transformation, check out our community at wbs.rocks. We'll see you next time.